In just a moment, we'll be telling you about tonight's subject and special guest. Night Call is an open forum. Speak for yourself. Ask your own questions. Call Night Call Collect from anywhere in North America. From the East and Midwest, call 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now from New York City, Night Call's host.
Good evening. This is Cal Shields, and I'm sitting in for Del Shields, who will be back with us tomorrow evening. Tonight we're going to be talking about the American Indian, the last minority. And our guest is Mr. Robert Bennett, who's calling in from Washington, D.C. Mr. Bennett, good evening.
Good evening, Cal. How are you?
Well, we're here.
Good.
Let me start off by asking you a question. The question is, should the Indian become part of the American melting pot and move from the reservation into the tenements?
Well, I think in Indian affairs, the government, as well as many others, have always more or less tried to establish some goals for the Indian people. And I think we've reached a point in history now where we should leave that up to the Indians themselves and give them every opportunity to develop their individual potential to its maximum, and also develop the economy of the Indian community so that in the final analysis they have the free choice.
How much progress have we made? It's been some 80 years ago since Chief Geronimo surrendered to the U.S. Cavalry. How much progress has been made?
Well, there has been considerable progress made when you take the situation the Indians were in 80 years ago and the situation they're in today. However, this progress has been slower than the rest of the population. As a consequence, when you measure their progress alongside of others, in some respects, maybe the gap is even wider than it was, say, 25 or 30 years ago. But there has been substantial progress in the education, health, and economic levels of the Indian people, but certainly not to the point it should be.
What do you feel can be done? As you said, there has been progress made, but as we look around today, we see that we, the people in the United States, are making such great progress. We go back again to the moonshot. Mm-hmm. It took some time, as we know, to get a man on the moon, but we've done it, and it didn't take 80 years. Would you say that this is a reflection on where we put our priorities?
Well, I think it might also be a matter for the where the Indian people put their priorities. Looking back in historical perspective, while the government with its programs has been available for 80 years, the Indian people, for reasons of their own, quite often would not participate in these programs. For instance, in the area of education, the Navajo tribe, which is the largest tribe in the United States of a little over 100,000, did not accept the system of education we know today until 1946. It was only then that they, as a people, started sending their children to school. So this and a variety of reasons, I believe, explains the lack of progress. And, of course, there was the actual isolation from much of the industrial development that has taken place in this country.
All righty. Mr. Bennett, we're going to break for station identification at this time. This is Cal Shields sitting in for Del Shields. Our topic tonight, the American Indian, the last minority, and our guest is Robert L. Bennett. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
What does the black man want, anyway? He wants what you want. You want to live in the best house you can afford? So does he. You want to crack at a better job? So does he. You want a good education for your kids. So does he. You want to be treated with respect. So does he. And you want to be accepted, just for yourself. So does he. We all want pretty much the same things. But it takes love to accept each other as brothers. And love comes from God. If you want to put faith, hope, and love to work in your life today, write for this free booklet now. The Turning Point, Religion in American Life, 184 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010. That's 184 Fifth Avenue, New York, New York, 10010.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now, back to Night Call.
And this is Cal Shields, and I'm sitting in for Del Shields, who will be back with us tomorrow evening. Our guest tonight is R.L. Bennett, and our subject is the American Indian, the Last Minority. And Mr. Bennett, we were speaking about the change, and I was wondering, has there been any reluctance on the part of the Indian to actually change his way of life and to come into the American mainstream?
Yes, there has been a great deal of reluctance on the part of the Indian people to do this. As a matter of fact, when the federal government first developed programs for the Indian people, it was with the idea of a total assimilation of the Indian people, and this was more or less on a forced basis. By that I mean the government worked out and laid out programs for the Indian people by which there was no other choice but to be assimilated with the rest of the population. And these programs have been resisted over the years, and it largely boils down to the fact that whatever the future of the Indians will be in this country, they would very much like to make that decision themselves. And so the forced assimilation policies earlier in the history of the relationship between the federal government and the Indian people did not work out. And as a consequence, it wasn't until 1934 that Congress passed the Indian Reorganization Act, which enabled the people to, again, have a large voice in determining their future.
All right, we're going to take a call from Brooklyn, New York. Mr. Lloyd is hearing Night Call on WLIB FM. Mr. Lloyd?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Bennett what he would classify as, or his personal opinion think, was the Indians' main reason, or what was the main reason as far as Indians are concerned for the lack of progress between the Indian and the United States government?
Well, Mr. Lloyd, in response to your question, the Indian people first in the evaluation of any program of the government ask themselves, how will this affect our way of life? And is it worth the changes we may have to make in our way of life if we participate in this program? So all of the programs of government or ideas of other people are screened by the Indian people, and if they feel that these programs or suggestions are not worth the changes they will have to make, then in most cases they refuse to go along with them.
You sincerely believe that this is, you know, the main reason or one of the main factors why, you know, the Indian, you know, refuses, or there's been such great delay or limited progress in unity between the Indian and the United States government?
Yes, I do, because if the government has been trying to provide the leadership in this direction, but the Indian people feel that they are in a position to provide their own leadership, and in doing so have the feeling that their own leaders will help them make the necessary adjustments to the rest of society and they don't feel that there can be any substitute leadership for their own.
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on that behalf. Isn't it true that, especially in the days of the Great Indian Wars, where time after time treaties have been assigned, initiated by the United States government, presented to the Indian did accept for terms of peace. And each time the treaty was violated by the United States government, and another treaty maybe was formed, pushing the Indian further and further westward, and it was broken time after time, and yet and still you state that, the reason you give, you think is really this true reason, or is it a reason of distrust that the Indian has, and justifiably so?
Well, you state a pretty good, pretty accurate history of the earlier relationship based during the treaty-making period. However, along with the distrust that some of the Indian people have as a result of this early experience, I think yet the stronger reason is that they want, in any event, to maintain their way of life as much as they can with the impact of other cultures around them, and they want to be recognized as a distinct people or a distinct group of people by the rest of the country. And these are some of the basic reasons that go along with the attitudes that have been built up in the minds of Indian people, and of course the breaking of treaties has contributed to this attitude also.
When you say contributed, in what sense? I would feel, put yourself in his place, and let's say time and time someone has made a promise or agreement, or let's say an actual treaty with you, and time after time it has been broken, you would say that this only contributes, or if a person shows to be a distrustful person, why should you go ahead and trust them time after time?
Well, as I agree that this is one of the elements in it, the relationship between the federal government and the Indians, but this is not the sole controlling element in their attitude toward the government. There are other factors also.
So any delay or let's say the lack of progress in uniting the two groups would be the fault of the United States government and not that of the Indian himself.
Well, I agree that the government has to share the major responsibility, because over the past years they have provided the programs and the leadership which has brought us to the present situation that the Indian people face today.
Oh, but these programs are so small.
This is true, and the Indian people feel this way because they feel that the federal government in some areas should be doing a lot more than they are doing, and the amount of funds and resources that the government makes available is not meeting the needs as the Indian people see them.
You said that they feel that, let me ask you this. Personally, do you think that the funds are sufficient or that they should be increased or they are too small?
I think the funds need to be increased because, for instance, in where we have boarding schools attended by young Indian high school students, the average per capita expenditure is $1,500 per student, whereas in private boarding schools, the average expenditure is $3,000 per student. And I'm sure that with $3,000 per student, the education program of these young people could be much better than it is.
Okay. Well, as far as, I feel personally, too, I like to say this, that the United States government owes the Indian quite a bit due to the fact that this was his own land, and he is really the only native of this continent or this area. And any program that's been initiated, I feel, too, has been too small. And we can compare it to, let's say, that was mentioned earlier, the space program, how fast it took us and how short a period of time we were able to reach the moon and the amount of funds that were invested in that program. And yet still, I say the amount invested in programs as far as the Indian is concerned is considerably much too small to me. All right, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thank you for calling,
sir.
Great
talking with you.
Mr. Bennett, we failed to mention that you had just resigned as Commissioner of Indian Affairs. Let me ask you this question. What difficulties did you have in trying to develop some type of policy relevant to the Indian people while you were the Commissioner of Indian Affairs?
Well, when I was appointed during the Johnson administration, I think we made substantial progress in the 3 years that I was commissioner. However, after the Nixon administration took office, there didn't appear to be any interest on the part of the administration. At least I was in the position from January 20th till May 31, and at no time did anyone in the new administration ask for what the Indian programs are or my views on what had been done or any recommendations as what should be done. There was a complete silence in this area.
Well, have any of the Indian people protested this lack of interest by the administration?
Yes, I had the support of all of the major tribes and major Indian organizations, as well as other organizations interested in Indians, that I be retained to carry forward some of the programs and policies which had been started while I was the commissioner.
Was there any response to this protest or this action?
No, there wasn't any response other than that the administration stated that they were going to put somebody else in my place.
Has someone else been put in your place?
Yes, an appointment was announced about 2 weeks ago of a Mohawk Indian from New York by the name of Lewis Bruce, Jr.
Have you met with Mr. Bruce?
I haven't met with Mr. Bruce since he has been appointed commissioner, although I've known him for at least 20 years.
Well, I take it that he has his own staff of people, and they will be trying to move forward.
Well, I hope so. Although he has been appointed, he actually hasn't taken over the position yet because of some other commitments. I understand that he will be taking over on September 15th, and then it'll be up to him to work out his program, and I hope that he will do this with the cooperation and support of the Indian people. At least I hope he goes to them to get their views on something that they want. This is what I did when I became commissioner in 1966. I immediately held a series of meetings throughout Indian country to get the recommendations and views of the Indian leadership before embarking on any kind of a program.
Hi, Mr. Bennett, if you just hold, we have to break for station identification. This is the Night Call Network.
Amphetamines, barbiturates, the up and down pills. They pick you up when you're down, they bring you down when you're up. Pills which could distort your judgment and could become addictive. If you take them, follow your doctor's advice very carefully. Because last year, tens of thousands of people abused these pills and got all strung out and tangled up. Some died. If you use amphetamines or barbiturates, please talk to your regular family doctor. Amphetamines and barbiturates are powerful drugs, too powerful to play around with.
The preceding was brought to you by the National Institute of Mental Health.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866 5010. Now back to Night Call.
And this is Cal Shields sitting in for Del Shields, who will be back with us tomorrow evening. Our guest tonight is Mr. Robert L. Bennett, and he has just resigned as Commissioner of Indian Affairs, and our topic is the American Indian, the last minority. We're going to take a call from Toledo, Ohio. Mr. Chappell, I believe, is hearing Night Call on WCWA. Mr. Chappell?
Hello there, Mr. Bennett.
Yes, sir.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I was going to give you a little bit of history. I used to go with an Indian girl when I lived in the East.
Oh, yes.
She came from the Tonawanda Indian Reservation.
Right, I've been there.
And you've been there?
Yes.
Well, I've been through there more times than a few.
Mm-hmm.
I used to work with Dollar's Eye Casting Company in Batavia, New York.
Mm-hmm.
And we had quite a few of the people from the reservation who worked there in the shop.
Right.
And every one of them, you could depend on them. They were good workers. I have nothing but the highest of praise for them. They obeyed orders, they did what they were supposed to do, and they did it thoroughly and did it efficiently and right. And this one girl, she was one of the inspectors on the bench. I used to go with her quite a lot. We had a mutual understanding. I wasn't going to try to marry her, and she wouldn't marry me, but we'd go together.
Mm-hmm.
And she had a relative in her family. I can't think of his name. He went to Carlisle Indian College.
Yes.
And when he graduated from there, he had a scholarship where he went to no less than Yale University.
Mm-hmm.
And graduated from law school there.
Mm-hmm.
With honors.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't do it on an athletic scholarship. He did it on academics.
Right.
And I understand that today he has a very high legal position in the country if he's still living. He did. I haven't been in contact with him in over 30 years.
Well, I think that the companies that...
I remember I have read about him in the paper. He even had a judiciary appointment.
Well, I think...
An Indian from the reservation who lived in a cabin and that liked to get up into the judiciary, that's quite a long stride.
Right.
But I have nothing but the highest of praise and compliments for any Indians who can even show signs of doing things in that direction.
Well, thank
you very much.
Well, sir, what exactly is your question?
I didn't have a question. I was just giving you the comments of my observation.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Well, thank you very much for your observation, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Good night.
Mr. Bennett, has the Indians begun to develop political action in any way? Are they getting into government? Are they starting to seat their people in positions that their people can help them?
Well, yes, there's a great deal of political activity taking place among Indians today. First of all, they do have a national organization called the National Congress of American Indians. And this is an organization that represents the majority of the Indians of the country with an office here in Washington, D.C. And in addition to that, they are taking a lot of political activity locally. By that I mean that they are beginning to run for school boards and municipal, county, and state offices, and I believe that in 20-some states now we do have Indian people who have been elected to the state legislatures. Now, in western New Mexico this year, there was a Democratic candidate and a Republican candidate for the state legislature for the people to vote on. And in each case, the candidate was a full-blood Navajo Indian. And in other communities where Indian people have been in the majority but haven't taken part in local politics, they are beginning to move in this direction and beginning to elect their people to these offices. And I think this is a very healthy sign and an indication that the Indian people are becoming much more politically active and politically oriented than they have in the past.
All right, sir, we're going to take a call from New York. Miss Collins is hearing Night Call on WLIB-FM. Miss Collins?
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening, Mr. Bennett.
Good evening, Miss Collins.
Hello?
Hello?
Yes, I speak loud. I can hardly hear you.
Okay, I will.
Okay, fine. Listen, there was an incident that happened today in Seattle, Washington, concerning the Indians, whereas they were prohibiting the white man from using their beaches because of the debris they distributed or left behind as they left. How do you feel about this?
Well, I think this is an action which was long overdue, and I know and have met several times with the leadership of the Quinault tribe that took this action, and I am sure that they were well justified in doing this, and that now that the public who use these beaches see that the Indian people mean business about it, I think that they will show more respect for the Indian people and for their property, and that satisfactory arrangements will be worked out, which will be respected by the users of this Indian property.
I agree with you wholeheartedly. So in a sense, you're saying that, well, do you feel that this is an indication of a new awareness on the Indians' part?
Yes, I think so. I think that they are going to use all of the machinery that is the governmental machinery that, and political action that is available to other citizens, primarily in the protection of what they think are their property, and in this case, some of the areas which have deep religious significance to them.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for calling, Ms. Collins.
Bye-bye.
This time out to Athens, Ohio. Mrs. Wheelie, I believe, is hearing Night Call on WOUB. Mrs. Wheelie?
Yes.
Yes, ma'am. Mr. Bennett is on the line.
Hello, Mrs. Wheelie.
Hello, Mr. Bennett. I've done some studying about Indian education and some of the different ways in which it was approached over the years. You know, the first they started out with a boarding school approach back in the 1880s. And it seems that after a period of turning to concentration on the reservation schools and this sort of thing, that they have gone back to a concentration on the off-reservation boarding schools, at least for some of the groups, such as the Navajos that you spoke about earlier. And I was wondering about this question of assimilation, you know, versus being your own people, and whether how these education policies are developing now. The Indians, in a way, seem to be similar to the Negroes in having this question of maintaining identity of their societies, and the Indians for a long time have had control over, or at least a great control over, reservation affairs, which is the same sort of things that many American Negroes seem to be seeking now in terms of control of local schools and this kind of thing. And I was wondering if you could comment upon the current state of Indian education, and if perhaps the Night Call host would make some comment about the comparison, if he sees a comparison between the problems of the Indians and the problems of the Negroes.
Thank you for your question. In the field of education, as soon as I was appointed commissioner, I did appoint a National Indian Advisory Committee on Education. And this group of Indian leaders from throughout the country have been advising the Bureau of Indian Affairs on educational policies. Now, basically, what they are after is a feeling that they have something to offer in their language, and that the introduction of the small children to education should be in terms of the environment of that the Indian people live in. As far back as 1940, there were some beginning textbooks written in both the Indian language and the English language, which related to the environment of the young person. However,
because of the politics of that day, we were forced to discontinue this.
Mr. Bennett and Mrs. Wheely, I'm going to ask you both to hold. We have to break for station identification. We'll be coming right back.
Okay,
stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
One black man in the space of a lifetime changed our country forever. Listen to him.
No individual can live alone. No nation can live alone. And anyone who feels that he can live alone is sleeping through a revolution. We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools.
You know that voice, Martin Luther King. You get what he's talking about? You don't if you think rioting and burning is going to solve anything. Any kid can burn and steal. But anyone with any brains knows that's not going to change things. What will? Faith, hope, love, and constructive action. Remember Martin Luther King.
We must all learn to live together as brothers, or we will all perish together as fools.
Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now, back to Night Call.
And this is Cal Shields, sitting in for Del Shields. Our subject tonight is the American Indian, the last minority. And Mrs. Wheely, I believe it is on the line, speaking to Mr. Bennett. Mrs. Wheely?
Yes?
Yes, you can go right ahead.
Well, in further answer to your question, Mrs. Wheely, the Indian people, once having started their children on the in the education in a matter in an area familiar to them, realize that their children have to have a good understanding of the English language and have to have a profession or a good technical training if they are to participate in the economy which is available to them. Now, some tribes have made a very good adjustment to this. For instance, the Pueblo tribes of New Mexico leave their Pueblos in the morning and, having had the benefits of some education, go to jobs in the communities near them as secretaries or machinists or auto mechanics, and then in the evening return to the Pueblos. And once having returned to the Pueblos, they participate in the life of the Pueblo as it has been going on for several generations. So I think Indian people feel that with a good education and a good sound economy and participating in the economy with the rest of the people, they will be able to survive longer as a people rather than to continually resist efforts at self-improvement.
Does that answer your question, Mrs. Wheely?
Well, this economics seems to be a very basic thing then, doesn't it? Whether they have the opportunity to have, say, modern-type education, which they can put to use close enough to the reservation to still preserve some distinctively Indian life, as he said, where they go into town during the day, but they can return at night.
Yes, that is correct, and most of the, you might say, job placements through the government program of Indian people during the last 2 years has been in communities near their reservation where they are able to commute, participate in the economic, political, and social activity around them, however, still able to return to their communities and have their life there.
I thought it was interesting in reading about the 1930s when there was really a press on for development of the reservations economically and also of the local education as opposed to the old boarding school idea, that this was during the Depression. It was not just an ideology, but also it seemed to be an economic pressure. And one of the interesting things was that after World War II came along and there were, you know, lots and lots of jobs in the broader U.S. economy, all these Indians who had supposedly wanted to stay on the reservation and maintain their peculiarly Indian ways of life left in, you know, large quantities to work in the defense plants and this kind of thing, and sort of brought an end almost to some of the experiments which were tried in the 30s on the reservation.
Yes, they have a very strong patriotic attitude about the government, and I believe this provided a lot of the incentive for them to leave the reservations. And of course, they recognized then their shortcomings in the training, and it was as a consequence of this experience that the Navajo tribe I mentioned earlier decided to accept education. And it's from that time on, 1946, that we mark education as really beginning with the Navajo people.
I was wondering if Mr. Shields would comment on whether he sees a similarity between the Indian problem and the Negro problem, as that is in terms of being American minorities. Of course, I know that the Indians are a much, much smaller group than the Negroes, and have perhaps been more rural than, say, today's Negroes. I mean, so many of them going to the big cities and so on.
Well, I think I can sort of sum up everything by saying this, that I think we're talking about the problem, well, what you would consider the problem of community control in the schools. I think it's a very beautiful thing that black people have started to become interested in what goes on in their schools. I also think that, I know myself personally, I go to school quite regularly to talk with my child's teacher and whatnot. And I find it very, very, it's just a feeling that it's a good feeling that you get, because you know that at last you do have a voice and you're starting to use that voice. You know, it's a shame when you look around and you see kids who are graduating from high school and they can't read. And when you say, well, I'm going to do something about it, I'm going to start having a voice in what goes on in my school. I think this is, it gives me great pleasure and pride to see
and
my people.
As a teacher, I must say that this is one of the things that teachers like, too, when the parents show an interest in the school and what the children are doing and can work in cooperation with the parents. It's so much more rewarding to be a teacher in that case.
Well, because, you know, again, we go back, we look, and we see that in white communities, the community has always had a say in what was taught and what went on in their schools. And when the black people started doing this, it became a very upsetting thing. You know, what do you want? They said, well, we want to control our schools. And when we talk about, well, the system talks about how slow we are. You know, we don't really push. But we say we want to control them. We want to have a say. Because we want our people to be educated. We want to turn out Harvard graduates. We want to be proud when we look at a graduating class from Yale or any other of the big schools and see black faces. Because we are in the mainstream, and we are there to stay. Does that answer your question?
Yes, thank you very much, Mr.
Thank you very much for calling. This time out to, right here in New York, Mrs. Clement is hearing Night Call on WLIB FM. Mrs. Clement?
Yes, hello.
Hello. Do you have a question for Mr. Bennett?
Yes, I'd like to ask Mr. Bennett, why, in your opinion, did the Nixon administration appoint a new commissioner without going to the Indian people for advice on their own choice of a commissioner?
Well, this is a hard question for me to answer because, as I stated earlier, most of the larger tribes throughout the country, as well as the Indian organizations, both regional and national in character, asked that I be retained in the position to continue some of the programs and policies that had been started. However, without giving any particular reason, the administration has appointed their own man.
You don't have an opinion, or would you rather not?
Well, I really don't know, because in all of the months that I was the Commissioner of Indian Affairs in the new administration, I heard from no one in the administration except that I was to be replaced. There was no conversations or discussions about Indian affairs or Indian policies or Indian programs.
Another question, what are foundations doing to fund the efforts of Indians to be heard?
Well, it happens that I'm a consultant to a foundation which has more or less decided that their efforts are going to be in the direction of assisting Indian tribes and groups with the idea of seeing if they can help them build an economy. And having established a firm economy, this will enable the Indian communities to survive that much longer. And so I am happy that several foundations are beginning to look into the Indian field now, and I am glad that I'm associated with one of them as a consultant as they begin to develop with the Indian people and respond to requests for financing programs that are Indian developed and Indian controlled.
Indigenously controlled economic development type projects.
Yes, I'm, as a matter of fact, writing the position paper for this particular foundation, and it's founded on the fundamental philosophy that the proposal should be originate with the Indian people and should provide for control by the Indian people, whereas in the past, many foundations have given large sums of money, like to universities, to go out and study the Indians, but the Indians have had nothing to say about the proposals or anything at all, and I feel that the foundation I'm associated with is going to, encourage Indian people to submit proposals directly to this particular foundation.
Do you see the possibility of a coalition between the various minority groups, the people who'd like to alleviate the illnesses of the society?
Well, I think there are some areas in which they will be a common effort. I think the Indian people will ask other minorities maybe for support. However, as has been indicated earlier, the Indian minority is a very small minority, and they also have a different history of their relationship with the federal government based upon treaties and acts of Congress and so forth, which related specifically to them. And as a consequence, and also they have a special bureau, the Bureau of Indian Affairs, in the federal government through whom they relate to the federal government. And so while there may be some common interests in the terms of political activity and political action and goals, yet there is also a great deal of difference, particularly in the historical relationship that existed between the Indian people and the federal government.
You were talking about schools, and I missed part of that. I was wondering, the Indian people have such a great heritage, and it seems to me that it would be very beneficial to non-Indian children, to my children, to learn of Indian culture and black culture. And we get a sterile education.
Well, one of the things that has happened recently, again working with another foundation, they did have six of the old traditional Indian leaders brought to Denver, Colorado a year ago and went through a tape recording session. And this was to get their attitude about such philosophical questions as what is life all about, and where did we all come from, and is there a hereafter, and all of these sorts of questions. And it is hoped that this will be published soon, and this may be the forerunner of a book on Indian philosophy, which I think will contribute to this country.
How could I find out where that will be available?
Could you just hold that point, Mr. Bennett? We must break for station identification. Miss Clement, you can hold the line, and Mr. Bennett, answer your question.
Okay.
This is Cal Shields sitting in for Del Shields again. Stay tuned for the Night Call Network.
Black is a red-blooded American color. The black showed the color of his blood in places like Vietnam and Korea and every other all-American battleground since the Revolution. Every time his country calls for help, he hears, but we don't seem to hear him call. If black and white would listen with their hearts, they could hear each other. That's what Night Call is all about. It lets people air their views man to man, color to color, live, from phones anywhere in the country. A syringe full of junk bites into black and white skin with the same ruining surge. And a black mother cries over her child just like a white one does. The problems are the same. The characters just have different colors. Night Call's person-to-person nationwide radio hookup lets the black and white tell it like it is. Night Call, each weeknight on this station. Speak for yourself from anywhere in North America to tonight's Night Call guest. All Night Call collect from the East and Midwest on 212-749-3311. From the West, 212-749-4300. And from the New York area, 866-5010. Now back to Night Call.
And this is Cal Shields once again, and this is Night Call. And Mrs. Clement is on the line speaking with Mr. Bennett. Mr. Bennett, I believe you are preparing to answer a question.
Yes, Ms. Clement, you're interested in being put on the mailing list when this manuscript is published. I would suggest that you write to Arrow Incorporated.
Arrow?
Yes.
Incorporated.
DuPont Circle Building.
DuPont Circle Building.
1346 Connecticut Avenue Northwest, Washington, D.C.
All right, thank you.
You're sure welcome.
One other question, if you have time.
Yes, ma'am.
Just what are the possibilities of a pan-Indianism, of our Indian people talking together more across the tribal lines and all?
Well, they do have an organization called the National Congress of American Indians. And since the Indian people are becoming more action and political oriented, I'm sure that they are more and more will be joining together in this one national organization. And the National Congress of American Indians will be holding its annual convention in Albuquerque, New Mexico, the week of October 7th. And I'm sure there'll be a great deal of coverage of this convention by the news media, and I think it'll be one of the largest Indian-attended conventions of this particular national organization.
That's very interesting. That's my last question.
Thank you very much for calling.
Thank you.
Mr. Bennett, can we speak a minute about treaties?
Yes.
We know that... every time we watch television, or go to a movie, we see treaties being signed and whatnot. Do these treaties still stand today, or have they been completely disregarded and wiped out?
Well, the treaties still stand, and the Indians hold the government to them in terms of at least a moral obligation. Now, of course, some of the particular provisions of the treaties are just historical because of the fact that the provisions related to conditions at that time, such as furnishing one blacksmith or one flour mill or something like that for the Indian people. And also, as a matter of law, the federal government's right of eminent domain is superior to any treaty it has with the Indian people. So actually, when they talk about a treaty, they're talking more about the principle of the government giving them the recognition and respect that they want as a people. And quite often they do not go into, you know, particular sections of the treaty. Most of the discussion and dispute now in terms of treaties relate to primarily to fishing and hunting rights. And the Indian people feel that they were accorded these rights by the federal government and wish them respected. However, there has been a great deal of difference of opinion, particularly in the northwest states of Washington and Oregon.
All right, sir, we're going to go out to Philadelphia, PA this time. Miss Kathy English is hearing Night Call on radio station WRTI. Miss English?
Yes.
Yes, Mr. Bennett is on the line.
Earlier you said that the Indians were rather reluctant in accepting help from the government. Now my question is simply, do the government really expect the Indians to welcome them into their heart, open-heartedly, and to their homes and everything, after they have stole so many times from them? You know, it's like if a thief came into your home and stole everything, and would you let him in a second time and say, well, I forgive you, and come on in, you know, I understand. Is this really what the government expects?
No, I think the federal government has come to the realization that their policies of forced assimilation certainly are not working and did not work, and they are coming more and more to the realization that the Indian people want to establish their own goals for themselves and to help determine their own destiny in this country, and they feel that they want to be and need to be partners, co-equal partners with government in this effort. And there is more and more, I believe, an acceptance, at least there was by the administration when I was the commissioner, that this was a fact of life, and that the quicker that the Indian people were made co-equal partners with the government in the development of policies and programs, that the Indian people would progress that much faster.
Well, this idea may seem to be a little far-fetched, but if they wanted to solve the whole problem, just throw the government over to them since it belongs to them anyway. I mean, none of us actually have any right to be here except the Indians. So if they want to solve the problem, then give it to them, you know?
Well, I don't know if they, such a mess now, I don't know if the Indians would take it.
I don't know. Well, it would help to try. But now, you know, enough of that. I'd like to make a comment right now. I'm a teenager, and my only prayer is that when we begin, you know, the youth begin to take the places of our parents, that we won't make such a mess of everything and, you know, have to go through all these shambles and everything. But maybe that we can straighten out all of these problems, if not most of them, because the youth seem really to be upset about what our forefathers have really done to this country. And by the time that we take over, I hope we don't become a stalemate as our parents have been in the past. And that's all I'd like to say.
I agree with you wholeheartedly, and I'm quite sure that we won't. Thank you very much for calling. Back to New York this time. Miss Helen Escalera, I believe, is hearing Night Call on WLIB-FM. Miss Escalera, I believe?
Yes. I would like to know, I don't know very much about how the Indians actually live on the reservation, but in the schools when they're being taught, are they taught the same history that, let's say, black people are taught in school, or are they taught a more truthful, you know, a true-to-life history in their classrooms? Or do they have, like, a separate course just on Indian life or whatever?
Well, in answer to your question, there was an attempt made about 25 years ago to bring matters closely related to the Indian tradition, Indian environment, Indian language into the classroom. At that time, education or anybody else was ready for it, and so not much was done along this line. However, in recent years, more and more tribes are writing their own history, and this is being made available not only in the schools in which their children attend, but also in some of the schools surrounding the Indian community so that the non-Indian students who live in the general area of a particular tribe are having made available to them the history of the tribe as the Indian people see it. And so this is just beginning. It is not widespread, but there is more and more of this being done all of the time.
Do you think they'll ever make an effort to make, you know, the truth about the Indian known to all the students in the United States? Has any effort been made in that way at all?
Well, I think this is coming, and they are starting now to do this in the local areas, and I think this is where it can be most helpful because they need to have, their neighbors need to have some appreciation of the fact that Indian people had a history and had historical heroes and had much to be proud of. And I think once this is done in the local community, then it's going to branch out into the larger community.
Well, I would like to make a comment right now. I feel that as soon as the United States as a whole is able to accept the truth of the American history and the Indian history, we'll be a lot closer to getting to the problems of everybody. Because as long as we try to ignore the past or make it what we want it to be, it's not facing the facts. And if we can't face the facts of the American Indian, which is what we're all about, the rest of it will never come to a head either. That's all.
Thank you very much for calling. Bye-bye. Mr. Bennett, do you foresee any type of militant action on the part of the Indians if their whole situation is not changed?
No, I don't look for any serious militant action on the part of the Indian people, but I do believe that they will become more action-oriented. By that I mean is they will want faster and quicker and more responsive action than they have had in the past. But the Indian leadership generally throughout the country frowns on any real, you might say, demonstrative type of militancy, and I think it largely has to do with the fact that they have always maintained a great deal of pride and dignity in all of their relations with the government, and that if the price is too high, then they would forego. And this is what they have always done in the past. And while this leadership is in the hands of the Indian people as it is today, I think you'll probably have maybe a few sporadic outbursts here and there, but as a policy of the Indian leadership,
Mr. Bennett, thank you very much for being our guest tonight on Night Call. This is Cal Shields. Del Shields will be back with us tomorrow night. This is Cal Shields. Bless you.
Night Call, tomorrow night, same time, same station. Another Night Call guest will be on hand with a subject of vital interest. Listen tomorrow night. Discuss freely and responsibly your own personal opinions on Night Call. Produced by the United Methodist Church, presented with National Council of Churches, National Catholic Office for Radio and Television, American Jewish Committee, and Urban Coalition.